Hello to everybody out there who's got a desire that you've never acted on, even though you deeply want to, who needs to talk to your partner honestly about it, because why not? You only live once, and that can be comfortable. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Welcome to Beautiful Anonymous. Thanks to everybody who came and saw me in Baltimore last weekend. Up next, look forward to seeing some of you in Minneapolis, chrisgeth.com. If you want to know when those dates are, end of the month, as well as how to get tickets. But it's not about that. It's about the phone calls. And I'm so excited for you to hear this one. This one is going to be many people's favorites. There's going to be some people, granted, who go, this just is not, it's a little risque, maybe not my type of thing, but we have a caller who talks primarily about working in an industry where she helps facilitate the sale of sex toys. And she has worked in sex shops. And this is something she's done for many years in her life, starting with working the counter at sex shops and now all the way up through the industry, getting promoted through helping with distribution and sales and things like that. But ultimately, what we have is a call about openness, about cultures that remain hidden, in my opinion, unnecessarily, people who feel like they have to feel shame. And this caller has just lived in a world that rejects that wholesale, that rejects the notion that sexuality should be a shameful thing or a taboo thing. And it's a really cool thing to be reminded of. It's something that I think myself, I fundamentally believe that sex shouldn't be shamed and it shouldn't be shameful, but does it change the fact that I'm an awkward human who grew up Irish Catholic and nervous about everything all the time? No, it doesn't change that at all. And I think there's a lot of us who are going to sit here and go, this is a real eye-opening call. Obviously, there's some lascivious details. There's some insight into what's most popular in the world of sex shops, into what are the things that are most common that we seem to still keep hidden. And there's all those details, but overall, I think there's just a real positive spirit of own it, own what you want. Here's someone who doesn't judge anything, who works in an industry where you can't judge people for wanting what they want and for having things that others might consider behind closed doors. I really love this call. I will not soon forget it. Thank you to the caller for calling. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello?
Hi.
Is this Chris?
This is Chris, yes. How are you?
Sorry for asking that. I'm pretty great. How are you?
I'm good. There's no need to be sorry for asking that. That's a tradition at this point. You're participating in a tradition.
Cool.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Flattered by it.
Yeah, cool. All right. Same. I guess I'm like, does that annoy him at this point, or is it just like part of the shtick?
No, yeah, I'm all for it. All for it. No need to feel self-conscious.
Great.
There's many things to feel self-conscious about in life. That is not one of them.
All right, then I won't. I'll be done with that then. I liked your prompt today. It felt very much like a 900 number. Like, I'm waiting by the phone for your call. And I think every other time I've tried to get through to you, like, I've very much had like a specific thing to talk about. And today I'm like, let's just see what happens.
I love that. I really love that. That's quite cool. Refreshing, actually.
Sweet. So you're in Jersey. Mm-hmm. Are you getting hit by a storm at all?
It rained like cats and dogs for a whole bunch of hours. And now it's actually quite lovely out. I'm looking out a window right now. My neighbor is currently walking her dog right in front of my house. And it's a real big dog on a sunny day. That's what's going on in Jersey right now. But I was in Austin, Texas for a few days before that. And I landed just ahead of the hurricane.
Yeah, awesome. Good for you. Yeah, improv's big in Austin. I think they have like 6 theaters down there. I've never been, but that's what I hear. And I'm into improv, so I know that.
You are. Yeah. I know it's big down there. Comedy in general is very big in Austin. And I think one of the main theaters, I think one of the major improv theaters actually did close due to COVID, but I hear they're trying to reopen their space.
I think they went from like 8 theaters to 7 or like 7 theaters to 6. So like even them not doing well, I think it's doing better than a lot of other places.
Yeah, that town's always been strange in a lovely way. And then I went down there this time. I go, man, it's everybody in Austin seems stressed out.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it like the same stuff everyone's dealing with, or is it Austin specific?
It was two Austin specific things. It was one was that they had a law that allowed people to camp anywhere in town, which led to a lot of tent cities for unhoused people. And
sure.
It's very visible and very pronounced. And even just walking around, there's like a real omnipresence of people. Now, I was staying in an area where I also heard there was a recovery clinic that feels a lot like, oh, there's always people on the streets.
Right.
But I think a lot of people have said, well, this tent thing has been a disaster. And then there's other people going, oh, actually, we got to have time to ride it out and see if it works. And then there's a middle ground of people going, this seems like it's not working, but we can't just end it with no alternative. So there's a lot of chatter about that, even in casual conversation about people without homes.
I wonder how I would feel.
Yeah, hard to say. And then the other thing is that Joe Rogan moved to Austin and is talking about it. And everyone down there is talking about how there's been just a massive, I guess for years, there's been an influx of people from like the tech industry and California, and that was already creating some grumbling about gentrification in Austin. And now they're saying, now there's just this one very influential guy with a very huge podcast, and all these people are flocking here just to live in the same city as him. People are saying it's strange.
Ew.
People are saying it's strange.
Not the Joe Rogan stuff, but I think I don't mind sharing where I live. Like, I'm not super worried about anonymity. Not that people, that doesn't matter. But I live in Las Vegas, and we've had a lot of people from California, especially, like, move out here just because of cost of living and stuff like that. But people following a celebrity to where they're living is very bizarre to me and gives me, like, an icky feeling. what's the goal there? Like, why?
Yeah.
I think that's why I couldn't deal with being famous.
Yeah, it seems like it's just on everybody's minds. Just all these new people, and then a lot of people getting displaced, and then the displaced people living in tents, and the tents showing up in neighborhoods where people are going, not in my backyard. And it's it all. I don't know that any.
Where are they supposed to go?
I don't know. Need to help people. How long have you lived in Las Vegas?
Officially tomorrow, I believe, is 10 years. I started my cross country trip from Pennsylvania 10 years ago today.
So you lived in Pennsylvania?
I think I made it. Yeah.
And you went on a cross country trip, and then you got to Vegas and you said, I'm staying here. This is the new home base.
Well, the plan was always Las Vegas. Like, I grew up in New York, in Westchester County. I moved to PA when I was 17, like smack dab in the middle of my senior year, which happened to be like a couple of months after 9/11. So when I moved to PA, all of the Pennsylvanians were like, oh, did you move because of that? And I was like, no. But I can see how it might appear that way. But that was really bizarre. Anyway, I spent 10 years in Pennsylvania, and then I had a partner at the time who desperately wanted to move to Las Vegas. His mom was out here. So, you know, kind of like it was an easy transition for him to come out and stay with her while he kind of got on his feet. And he did that, I think, in April of that year. And then, I waited for him. It sounds terrible. I waited for him to do all the work. He got a job and got an apartment. And then I packed up my little Honda Civic with my two cats. And my little brother came on the drive with me, and we drove like basically straight through. I slept while he drove and vice versa. So we made pretty great time. And I've been here ever since, except for a short couple of years where I was in Los Angeles, but I hated it.
And you said that was your ex-partner. So you moved with your partner, and now that is no longer your partner.
No longer my partner. No, we made it out here. I think we were together a total of 5 years, and he was definitely the person I thought I was going to end up with forever, but that didn't end up happening. Once we came out here, I think we lasted 2.5 years before ultimately I fucked it up. Sorry, Sally.
Oh, no.
But I did. Yeah. I mean, listen, at this point, it's been quite a while. You know, we're going on 8 years since that relationship ended. And I've done a lot of growing. I haven't been drinking for like, I think 260 days now. I've been through my own hell as far as relationships go. And I think I've learned a lot about myself. And ultimately, I hurt him in a way that he didn't deserve for my own terribly unhealthy reasons. I felt unfulfilled. I felt like he wasn't paying attention to me. And so I was getting that attention elsewhere, and I acted on it. And I have forgiven myself, but he definitely didn't deserve it. Yeah.
It does. When you talk about Vegas, in one sense, I've been through Vegas enough times to know there's the Vegas that we all know about, and that's a very real thing. There's also Vegas, which is people living in neighborhoods and houses that look just like neighborhoods and houses everywhere else. But it does sound like, you know, there's people out there going, you go to Vegas and you live the wild times. And you mentioned that you got sober and that maybe you found some attention elsewhere. And it does sound like it fits that stereotype of like, oh, things get crazy in Vegas and people go hard and party all the time.
I think that's true. I think there are some people that come here with that intention. And I think my main reason for coming here, aside from it being an easy transition, having, you know, family here, was that it doesn't snow here. And that was really like, it just every year winter would come on the East Coast and I was like, I can't do another one of these. And so finally it was like, okay, cool. I'm never going to have to do this again.
Yeah.
And I can get rid of the scraper for my car and I don't have to worry about driving in it. So that was a big deciding factor, but I don't know. Vegas is a very popular place on the flip side for people to clean up their acts. Like, AA is big here. I'm not in AA, so I'm not breaking any rules. But I know that like this is a hot spot for AA. And maybe it's because people come here and go too hard and hit rock bottom. But yeah, I think I was already living a troubled lifestyle before I came here, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, for everything that I've been through over the last 10 years, I just checked. It's been 257 days since I had a drink today. Wow. And my problems were around for years and years before that.
And you're feeling better in those 257 days?
Oh my God. I love it. I love it so much. I think, you know, I don't have to worry about waking up hungover. I don't have to worry about like waking up with a guilty feeling and not really remembering why, just kind of waking up knowing like, oh, I have to apologize to people today and I don't know what for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a few nights like that.
That was, yeah. And I think the last time I did it, like the last time I drank, I was having a meeting with my comedy group via Zoom. And I was acting a fool and I got up to take a break from the meeting and I like went to the restroom and I, on my way, like trying to leave the restroom, like I literally fell and cracked my head open in the shower and there was blood everywhere and I couldn't drive. So I was just like, yeah, I think this is enough because I shouldn't be drinking alone and this could have been so much worse. And so yeah, December 8th was the last time I drank anything.
That's not a good feeling to know everybody can hear it in a Zoom. That's
oy vey.
That's a there's a pandemic specific thing. Decided to get sober after drunkenly cracking my head open and understood my improv group was listening on a Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
yeah. And they're so supportive, you know. No one judged me, at least not outwardly. But I got to say, like, it's been a really phenomenal decision. I think there's been a lot of stuff to accomplish. My comedy group, my improv group, just started basically a school, like a training program here. And we launched classes yesterday, and obviously there's a lot of back end work. I've just felt much more clear and focused and awake, and I'm sleeping well. It's all the things are lining up. And I think alcohol was just a small part of it. Taking that out was just a small part of it.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad that you're feeling clear headed in that sense. And then I'm glad that there's all this other forward momentum that exists simultaneous to it. So that can't be a bad thing, right? To have one piece of the puzzle be the alcohol, and then now you'll also associate it with this exciting thing and like creativity and launching a new venture with these creative people. Now those eras will always be tied together in your memory. What a nice thing. What a nice confluence of events, you might say.
Yeah. I agree. I still don't know where it's all going. And I think I'm, for the first time in my life, okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, normally I think I'm a very much, like, not so much a planner, but, like, I need to know why and how, and that makes me feel safe and secure. And I've had to let a lot of that go. Because the reality is, I think I moved, you know, think about, like, me moving here 10 years ago. I had some idea of what my life was going to look like, and that has just, nothing even close to that happened. I thought I'd move out here, he and I would get married, you know, maybe, you know, like, I don't, you know, just that life. And yeah, that didn't end up happening. I ended up getting poached for like a job in Los Angeles to help design sex toys. And so I moved out there for a couple of years, and I just hated it so much. I missed my friends in Las Vegas. I missed the community. I was driving out here like every other weekend. Not to mention my boss was just the worst, just an absolute tyrant of a person. And, you know, so I ended up moving back.
I'm going to pause.
Sure.
Because we can't just, I mean, it's your life. So these things are all just, you know, points on the line, and you're telling us about the points, but I can't just rush past. So you moved to LA to design sex toys, and then you said you hated it. Did you hate Los Angeles, or did you hate designing sex toys?
No, God, sex toys I love. I've been I've been in the sex toy realm for half of my life. Like, I started when I was 18. I'm 37 now, so I started like working in adult stores and like, you know, selling porn and selling sex toys. So I've really built a career out of that, and to be like kind of tapped to come to Los Angeles and help create a company and design the product, that was a phenomenal opportunity. Los Angeles itself, I hated. I think I was, at that point, I was making more money than I had ever made in my life, and I was broker than I had ever been in my entire life at the same time.
Just the cost of living,
yeah, that,
and the lifestyle.
Right. Yeah, the cost of living. And I think just, I don't know, I already get anxiety, like with traffic and, you know, parking. And that's, you know, it's nothing new to say that that's awful. It was really just LA itself and the person who was my boss at the time that made it just awful and miserable. Like, some of the darkest times in my life were the 2.5 years I was in LA. So I would drive back to Vegas like almost every weekend or every other weekend. I still had a very cool friend group here. I had started dating someone else who was in Vegas, so I was doing the long distance thing. I mean, we can talk more about sex toys. I'm still in that business. I work for a wonderful person now.
You are? What kind of?
Yeah.
What? So you said you started out working in sex shops. These are like the types of sex shops that you'll see from time to time when you're driving down the highway or walking through a city where you go in. And I think there's varying degrees of what those might mean. How does one at the age of 18? Okay. Yeah. Let's start at the beginning. And then I want to hear about the background.
Let's start at the beginning.
And then I want to hear about where you're at today. working for this wonderful person.
Okay.
So you said, well, 18, okay, you wind up working in a sex shop. How does that happen? And what is the nature of this sex shop? And let's pause right there, because that's a question everybody wants to know the answer to. How do you wind up at 18 selling sex products at a sex shop? Speaking of selling products, I'm about to do so via ads. We'll be right back. Thanks to all of our advertisers who helped this show exist. Now let's get back to the call. 18, okay, you wind up working in a sex shop. How does that happen? And what is the nature of this sex shop?
100%. I have always had a fascination with pornography, almost like to the point where it's not even like sexual. It's just like, oh, these are people's bodies and this is what they do. And so from a very young age, I was kind of, I am a woman, I'm a cisgender woman. But I was like, a lot of my friends would, put gender normative stereotypes on me, like, oh, you're like the guy in our group, because I would invite people over to my house to watch porn, but like just in a fun way. So then anyway, when I'm 18, I was in college briefly and ran out of money. So I had to drop out due to financial reasons. I moved back in with my mother, who at the time we were living in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And she was like, you have 2 weeks and then you have to find a job, like basically 2 weeks to like settle back in, get your shit together, and then you have to get a job. And at 18, I had like, bright green mohawk and like piercings. And I was like, I don't want to work at Hot Topic. What else is going to hire me? So I walked into the local porn shop and sure enough, like there were, two people behind the counter that had funky hair and body piercings and tattoos. And I was like, oh, cool. Give me an application. And they hired me. I was making like $6.50 an hour to rent out VHS porn to all the local neighborhood dudes. And I remember like greeting people when they walked in, people walk into a store and I would just be like, hey, how are you? And my manager got so mad at me. It was just like, don't talk to these people. They don't want to be talked to. They just want to come in and get their movies and leave. And I was like, that seems weird. And I had that guy's job like a year later. And I just worked my way up through that company until I was the district manager. Wow. Overseeing quite a few stores.
She said video rental, toy sales. Now, I do want to ask, I also know that sex shops can be a meeting place for people to hook up. I know that in the gay community, historically, they've been kind of a safe haven for that. I wonder if that's...
Yeah, with like the arcades and theaters.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that's an aspect of... any of the shops you worked in and what the relationship is sort of working there while also providing this haven for people who are, of a persecuted group, having a place to meet.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I like that you bring that up because that's something that I've always felt was very important about what I did. Like, I don't know, some naysayers or people that really are uncomfortable with the idea of sex and the realm that I've made a living out of, can be judgmental, right? Like, oh, you had to drop out of college and work at a porn shop, and I got my fair share of that. And maybe some of it is internalized as well, but I've always appreciated the fact that like we are a safe haven, especially for folks that are mistreated elsewhere or marginalized groups. The theaters and arcades, the meetup spots, Those were a lot bigger when I moved to Las Vegas and stores were open 24 hours. And we actually got to kind of like, we're selling tickets to you so you can go in there and meet up with someone. It's really the best stores and the stores that I've worked in are not judgmental places. We're not necessarily going to allow illegal activity to go on. But we're also not going to, assume gender and think that we know what your partner is without you dictating the language of that. And if you're buying a ticket to go into the theater to meet up with someone, that's your business. I think that's something that has always attracted me to the industry and has kept me in the industry as long as it has. is that it's very, it should be at the core of it, very welcoming and non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm. I just, yeah, it's a thing I've always been so fascinated by, you know, is this idea, like we were talking before about, you know, oh, Austin, people say not in my backyard. And then a sex shop is another thing where people kind of, you know, you might see a neighborhood where it goes, oh, an adult bookstore open and we don't want it here. And then you read about it. There was a great documentary on Netflix. Oh, I'm blanking on the name of it, about a pornographic bookstore in Los Angeles that closed. And it was this like very sad thing for the gay community because it was a place where you could go and it was understood you're going to be safe here and you can find certain types of books that you might not find elsewhere and you're not going to be judged and you might even be able to meet other people who are kind of feeling it out and figuring out sexuality
yeah.
or who feel scared or feel unsafe, especially, you know, in prior decades. And the whole culture of adult bookstores and sex shops as these safe havens for, I'm sure that there have been many an academic essay written on this topic, but it's a really, really fascinating thing. It's not just like, oh, that's where you go to rent your porn. It's very often that's where someone who feels very unsafe feels total lack of judgment when they don't find it anywhere else in their
yeah.
life. And that's a very different thing when you think about it.
It's super different. And I don't think there's enough emphasis on that. Like when people are terrified that a porn shop's going to open up, you know, down the road, like what are they afraid of? You know? And I think that's largely what I appreciate about the company that I now work for is that we're not only are you buying products from us that are high quality, but you're really getting a lot of content and education behind how to like destigmatize pleasure in the first place. You know, and a lot of that is definitely, you know, it's feminism, which is really about everyone being equal, you know, but the constructs of, you know, global constructs. And then, you know, obviously more specifically, the patriarchy that America has suffered, endured, I don't know what the right word would be, maybe all of the above, has really, you know, like created everything that people are afraid of. It's all these magical ethereal ideas that aren't actually real. You know, virginity is a construct and, you know, consent, you know, was created as a way to combat what was happening to us. And I think being in the sexual realm, you know, especially from the time I was 18 and up, at least, you know, I mean, I was always curious about it. You can't forget that like folks that are going into the business at that age are also like, I attribute a lot of my own growth and learning about myself to being surrounded by the people who are creating these products and talking about these acts and normalizing a lot of it. Cause I think, you know, especially for women, obviously, like I can't speak for all women. I can speak from my own experience. You don't get taught pleasure. You know, we don't learn about pleasure in sex ed. We learn about boys ejaculating, but you know, what is there? What about me? Like, what do I know? I know that I get a period and then it's over, right? Like, I know that I can get pregnant and then my life is over. I know that I might get an STD and my life is over. Like, we don't talk about my body and what feels good and pleasure and how to safely maneuver those topics. I think more comprehensive sex education would dispel a lot of the fear around, you know, sex shops and sex toys and pornography.
Now, I love this. I love hearing how hard you've thought about this. I love hearing that it's like, it's a job, but then you go, oh, this is actually an industry that I have found comfort in and that I've worked in for decades. And I can think about it from like a grown-up perspective. So I'm not going to try to just be totally lean into the sensationalistic side of it, but this one kind of splits the difference. So with what you've just said in mind, I feel like there's another aspect of this, which is there's probably people who walk down the street who from the outside eye, you go, oh, they're totally square. And then you have this perspective from you've worked in this industry where when you were in the actual sex shops themselves, overseeing them, working your way up that chain, you go, oh, that's a person who you might just see online at Starbucks and they wouldn't guess that they're coming in and buying blank. And I want to know when that sentence ends with the word blank, what are the common items that you know from your perspective more people are into than we talk about. You know what I mean?
Oh, butt stuff. Yeah, butt stuff for sure. Yeah, in fact, like, yeah, the company I work for has a few distinct brands. We manufacture all the products, but one of the brands is specifically anal sex products. Because, you know, there was a lacking of it. You know, we're not super old. We're a 5-year-old brand. But it is by and large the topic that every single person, it appears, is curious about and wants to know more about. And, you know, the butt is an equal opportunity orifice, you know, everybody has one. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you have this part of your body that is just rich with nerve endings, you know, and why are we ignoring it? Or why are we acting as if pleasuring it is a bad thing, you know? And so that topic alone, I think, is so full of taboo and misinformation and dangerous and harmful information that the act of anal sex or anal pleasure isn't something that people are as open to talk about or to explore in any sort of public realm. It's usually like that's what people are going to walk up to you and whisper, like, hey, do you sell butt plugs? You know, it's like, come on, like really everyone's trying it. And if they're not trying it in a safe way with the information that they need to make it pleasurable and safe, then yeah, we're just creating more people out there that have a bad experience. And that's going to spread more misinformation. That's a long answer to your question. It would definitely be butt stuff.
Love it. And now
BDSM stuff too.
And like, you know? Did 50 Shades of Grey, did that really get more people coming through the doors in that
church? It did. Oh my God. Yeah. Hands down. I mean, we refer to it as like, I think it was the great Benoit Ball shortage of 2014 or whenever that happened, 2013. because I have never read the books. I have never seen the movies. But I know that there's stuff happening with Benoit balls in there because literally no supplier had them in stock for like 6 months.
I have not read the books or seen the movies as well. I think I've heard the phrase, but I'm not sure what is it a Benoit ball?
Yeah.
Is that a ball that goes up your butt?
Yeah, Benoit balls. No, you don't want to put these balls up your butt because there's on a lot of them, there's no retrieval leash and the butt, things can get lost up there.
Yeah.
The vagina, however, is a safe place. So these balls were designed basically like they're weighted internally. So it's like you have this little ball and you can shake a little ball around and you can hear and feel the weight inside of it. Those balls will go inside the vagina and with any movement of the body, they kind of create this internalized sensation of vibration without a motor.
Got it.
I think, yeah. And they're also great to use, you know, in conjunction with Kegel exercising because it's kind of like, you know, weight training, but with your Kegel muscles.
Now, check this out. Some people have turned this one off at this point. And everybody who hasn't turned it off has turned it up. So this is for the people who have turned it up. Let me ask. So we mentioned these balls. You say butt stuff. Now, in the course of that, butt plugs, common one that come up. I would imagine anal beads are a thing that you have to keep well stocked. I bet that's an entry level butt play thing that people get into.
Yep. People know what anal beads are, so it's definitely something that people will ask about.
I like to be full disclosure on this show. Maybe I shouldn't be with this. I got nothing against butt stuff. I did once tell a joke on a stand-up album. This was in 2012. I think this in subsequent years became a little bit of like a meme. I was at the early era of saying like eating butt, nothing wrong with eating butt. It's fun. Let's everybody get over it. So I got no problem with butt stuff. But I've never liked the thing in my butt. It's a thing that people, you know, when you're single and some people, they throw a finger in as a part of a thing. And I just realized, morally, I got nothing against this, but the sensation is not for me. So a butt plug, my understanding is that kind of places some pressure amongst those nerves you mentioned that can make other things pleasurable. Or get you ready for anal sex, perhaps, like sort of to train and get you loosened up and ready for there, right? What are the other?
You say these like you sound like you're inquisitive, but you also know what you're talking about.
Oh, I know a lot about this stuff. No, I know. Please,
Okay.
I read a lot. I retain a lot of information, so I know what a butt plug is.
Cool.
Anal beads, a series of beads. You put them in one at a time. I bet that when you pull them out one at a time, that could be a fun part of the process too. Though I'm not sure. What are the other butt stuff things that fly off the shelves?
Well, there's a variety of plugs. So, you know, some butt plugs are definitely, you know, designed to be worn while other acts are happening. You know, some butt plugs are designed to help train your butt for something larger. So if someone's preparing for like a dildo or a strap-on or a penis, you know, this is going to help them get there, by, you know, training them to receive something bigger. Anal, you know, does it vibrate? Is it weighted? What is it made out of? Those are the main differences between butt toys, like the materials, their function, and their shape. You know, like I don't have a prostate. So a curved plug for me could still feel very great, but it's going to feel very different for someone who has a prostate. And also, you know, like it's all about kind of like the prep, you know, like I don't think anyone should just be throwing a finger in someone's butt without asking. Like that should never have happened to you. Sorry that it did.
No. Let me be clear. No one ever just tossed a finger in with malicious intent.
Okay.
I just feel like in the, you know, if we're just going to be this frank, my mother turned this one off a million minutes.
Right.
Ago. You know, there might be a thing. I think one thing that happens, somewhat frequently is maybe somebody's performing oral sex on a guy and they might start tickling down by the butt. And then in the course of it, some people will say a finger coupled up with a blowjob is a great thing. And nobody ever just jammed a finger up there. But in the course of exploring that, which is a thing that happens, I said, I have come to realize I find it more pleasurable. If it was a drive-through line, it would be, let's just get that one without the lettuce and tomato. I'll just order that sandwich without that. I just like it better without that topping. Yeah. I don't need that topping. It's not for me. There's other stuff I enjoy.
I like that. Yeah. I like that you likened it to a drive-through because that's kind of like when I'm teaching these classes on our anal products. And, you know, it's like anal sex is something that people have taken off their menu without even trying it. And the reality is like, you know, it doesn't matter who you're bringing to dinner. Like it matters the restaurant you're at, you know, because that's the other thing is like a lot of cis men who do enjoy anal play are up against this taboo that means they must be gay or they must be bi or they must be something. And it's like, no, it just means that your butt has, you know, like your sphincter itself has 4,000 nerve endings, which is the same amount of nerve endings as in the head of the penis. It's half the amount of nerve endings as in the clitoris. So why are we ignoring this? Like touching that and having it feel good doesn't mean anything about anyone other than they like when things feel good, you know? And that's this like basic thing that a lot of people refuse to wrap their head around because of what they've been told and taught and, you know, forced to believe by any number of like, I don't know.
I love it.
societal constructs. Religion's a big one.
And it's also too, I'll just say this on my end too. I do really hate that we're in a world where if somebody goes, I like X, Y, and Z in my life, that we then are trained to go, well, that must mean that you fit into this classification. And it's like, maybe you're gay or maybe you're bi or maybe you're just you and you can be comfortable knowing that everything you've liked thus far is something that, yes, you in fact like. But if you also, if you like being with a lady and you enjoy the lady to put on a strap on every once in a while, that doesn't fundamentally alter anything about, you know, what your morning was like this morning or what your morning will be like tomorrow. It hasn't rearranged your DNA. It's not a scarlet letter. It's just,
it doesn't mean you won't donate to charity. It doesn't mean you're like dogs more than cats. It's just, sex has been, it's used against us in so many ways, you know, and really it's used against anyone, you know, like I think for the most part, like it is something that does equalize us because it has been used against us as a weapon. You know, no one is immune to that. It doesn't matter what color or gender or sex or race you are. Because if you're a straight cisgender dude, you better only like tits and ass, you know, otherwise you're gay. Like that's, it's really this thing that's used against every single person. If we don't line up the way we're told to.
Companion question to this one, moving up from butt stuff. Here's a question that mm-hmm. I really am interested in. And that this one is a service to our listeners that I feel like you may be the only person who's ever called this who can answer this. I've been in a sex shop before. I lived in New York City. I mean, you walk around certain parts of town and even now in 2021, it's not like the old days with Times Square, but you know, you can't walk three or four blocks.
Some of the best ones are in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites? What one should I check out when next time I'm in town?
What do you have there? You have Babeland and Pleasure Chest. Those would be some really great progressive.
I think they're right by the,
that carry a lot of products.
Right by the Comedy Cellar, I think. At least I think Babes in Toyland is one that's right there, which I hear good things about.
Yeah, they're just so well informed and welcoming and equal and inclusive. Definitely. What was your next question?
Well, like you said, so much stuff gets classified as off limits. So much stuff gets classified as for fetishists. I know that mm-hmm. having stepped inside stores akin to this in my life, you will see products where if you haven't done your research, I don't know to the naked eye what that is or what it's for. This is just the thing, you know? You'll see the racks with the lingerie. You got to get what that is. You see the vibrators. You go, great. You go, oh, those are the really expensive ones. They're in a case that's locked up. There's all the lube, you know? You see the things you recognize.
Yeah.
Then you see some stuff where you go, okay, what is this exactly? And I'm wondering if there's any products out there that you think have historically flown under the radar where you're going, God damn it, if this was a little more mainstream, people would just be getting off more and loving it. Are there any products that you're like, if people were out here using cock rings, people don't even know the joy. Are there any things like that that you can think of where you're like, these things are great and people don't realize it? And let's pause. I feel like there might be listeners to this show, been listening since the very beginning, going, you know, 250 plus episodes. I've never heard Chris Gethard say the word cock ring, and it just happened. You can cross that one off your list. We'll be right back. Thanks again to all of our advertisers. Now we're going to finish the phone call. Are there any products that you're like, if people were out here using cock rings, people don't even know the joy. Are there any things like that that you can think of where you're like, these things are great and people don't realize it?
I do think, it's not a short list. I think in general, people will look at sex toys and even sex toys have a stigma around them, right? Like if you have a you know, quote unquote pocket pal or a pocket pussy, that must make you a loser. But it's okay for a woman to have a vibrator. Like, that's not true. I don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I'd say the majority of people in this industry don't feel that way. Like, sex toys are sex toys. They're here to help and enhance and make your experience better. I think sex toys are often overlooked by couples, you know? So I think first of all, stainless steel products like stainless steel dildos, I think are overlooked because they can look a little medical and people associate that with having a fetish. And that's not necessarily true. There are some really beautiful stainless steel dildos that, you know, you're not necessarily talking about something that's going to vibrate, but it is something that retains heat and cold very well. So, you know, if you like the sensation of ice, but you don't want to mess, you can run these under ice cold water and they'll retain that really well. Same with warm water. Obviously you don't want to boil them. We're not trying to hurt anyone. But I think, butt stuff and goodness. I think you're right when you say like, if people knew more about cock rings, I think they would use them more. You know, I think they have taken on this kind of like comedic, like, you know, everyone, I think Mr. Show back in the day did a sketch about cock rings, like, you know, it's like the cock ring warehouse. And so they've always been like attached to the comedy side. People are aware of them and know about them, but I think it's done a disservice because They can make your erection last longer. They can make your orgasm better. They can make your dick feel bigger. Like they're kind of all around great. And they're great for gender play if you want to use it on a dildo or a strap on or a packer.
Because I also feel like there is another aspect of this as well, which is that, I think cock rings are also another. They're a product that a lot of people might associate with the gay community, in a way where it goes, oh man, are we just all cutting ourselves off from a hell of a lot of fun? Hell of a lot of fun.
Yes. Because the gay people have done the work for you, you know? Trans people have done the work for everyone else. Like, that's the whole, you know, we owe a lot to our Black trans friends that have come before us. They have, you know, like, obviously, historically, some really huge monumental stuff, but let's not sell them short when it comes to sex and pleasure. Like, they know what's up, and we should be paying attention.
Right, right. I just read an article. I'm constantly reading long-form journalism, and I just found one about, as someone from this community, I bet you will laugh at this. It was an article that basically said, we are going to try to get to the bottom of figuring out who it is that makes poppers, because it's a very secretive thing. And for people who don't know, poppers are most sex shops, I would say, at least in the New York area, at the checkout counter, you'll see all these little bottles behind a case. And they're listed, they're often listed as like VCR cleaners or nail polish removers.
Head cleaner.
I've never used them, but my understanding is that you sniff them while you're having sex and that they make an orgasm really intense. And I know they're very popular in the gay community. And it basically was this article that was like, who's making these? Who is it? Cause there's a couple really huge brands, and it just got to the bottom of it. And, another product out there that I go, I've always heard of those. They've always been a bit of a punchline. I have no idea what they do. Is that a thing? Is that a thing that the world at large should know more about?
That I don't know about. Just because I know, you know, you're essentially talking about like huffing. It's similar to huffing,
and
Right. And I have also never used poppers. I've certainly sold my fair share of them. But they are kind of this like secretive thing. And I'll say, like, you know, you don't work in porn shops for 15 years without accidentally breaking a bottle of that at one point. And the smell of it, the fact that people are deliberately putting their noses up to it and snorting it is ridiculous to me, because it's not a good smell.
It's intense. You know? It's intense. It's chemical. I mean, I shouldn't sit here and encourage people, hey, go huff chemicals. Like, do your research, see if it's for you. Talk to someone who's used them before. It's just an aspect of your world I find very fascinating. Now, this one's obviously flying by. Once you start talking butt stuff, the time really flies. We've got 15 minutes left.
I know. It took us a while to get there.
Oh, no, stop. I do want to know what, you know, because you started ground level. I've been able to ask you about the culture of these stores, people coming in. I think you've done a lovely job of talking about, you know, stuff that people keep secret when it probably, hopefully we're at an era in history where if somebody, you know, wants to get a butt plug, they don't have to feel so bad about that. But modern day, it's been a long time. You're not a teenager anymore like you were when you started. Now you say you're working for a company that you're really psyched on, but still in this realm. What kind of stuff do you work on?
So I handle all of our wholesale accounts. So, you know, I'm not selling direct to consumers. I'm selling to, you know, like the Babes in Toyland and stuff like that. And they're selling our products to consumers, which, you know, a lot of it is, you know, not super fun stuff when you're talking about just like processing purchase orders and, you know, whatnot. But I do still have the opportunity, largely it's been over Zoom, to train the salespeople on our products and how to talk to consumers about it and how to start the conversation, and which products are recommended for, you know, the folks that are coming into the store. So someone who doesn't have any experience with sex toys, has never used one before, we're not going to recommend our most powerful vibrator. You know, we're going to want to start with something else. So that's the bulk of what I do is servicing our wholesale accounts, which, you know, we do globally. you know, Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, literally all over the world, you can find our products. And so that's cool. And talking to people about how to talk about sex and sex toys is, that's my passion. That's the best part of it to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. It must be cool for you to know, like, if you're working now in distribution, it's fair to say you have probably given thousands of people better orgasms.
I really hope so, you know, and even if we haven't, you know, even for the folks that maybe haven't had an orgasm yet, you know, like we refer to that as pre-orgasmic, you know, there's plenty of people out there, my age, your age, much older, that have never experienced that. Like, that's also okay. You know, it's really about the journey, you know, like, orgasms are great. I love them. I recommend them. Everyone should have one. And if you're unable to, that doesn't necessarily mean that your sex life is over or that you don't deserve pleasure. Pleasure is a birthright. And so, yeah, I think that journey of it, and I can speak for myself, like I know I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but working in this industry, I was always comfortable with it as an outsider. Like, porn fascinated me. I liked people's bodies. I didn't see anything wrong with it. It wasn't necessarily comic, you know, like, it wasn't comedy to me the way I think a lot of us are about it when we're uncomfortable with it. But I do know it has made my life better. It's given me confidence. It's made me unafraid to talk about what I like in the bedroom and to, you know, more importantly, talk about what I don't like in the bedroom. And I think that is what keeps me in it. And that is what continues to inspire me in conversations with people just on a regular basis. You know, like, maybe you're not having dangerous sex, but you're not having fulfilling sex. And why? Is it because you're afraid to tell your partner, I don't like when you lick my ear? You know, I don't like when you touch me like that. Like, there's a way to have those conversations that it doesn't feel like you're attacking anyone, or you don't have to hurt anyone's feelings. And what you're risking by not having those conversations is being unfulfilled, you know, being less pleased than you have the ability to be.
I love that. Now, you brought up that, you know, it affects your own conversations. Do you, working in this field, I have to imagine there's two things that might happen. One, do you ever find partners who are intimidated by you? Two, do you ever have partners where you realize they're putting you on a pedestal as some sort of, like, sex deity unfairly?
Yeah. It's happened a couple of times. And I get it. You know, like, I do get it. I was just talking about this with some sex worker friends of mine and how, you know, it does kind of feel like, in a way, unfair, but it's no one's fault. You know, like, I do know a lot about sex. I don't know everything. You know, I'm not a certified educator. I don't have a degree in it. But I think because I am open about it, and I think because of what I do for a living, I have ended up with people that are, yeah, intimidated by me. It does affect, you know, kind of the communication around it. I think I take on a lot of the responsibility at certain times with my partners, like, oh, I'll be the one to bring up something, or I'll be the one to mention, you know, I'm not happy with the frequency that we're having sex, or I wish you would initiate more, or, you know, this doesn't do it for me. And I'm okay with that burden because I think I'm helping other people, you know, like, they, I don't know, maybe it's like my sex version of Good Luck Chuck. Like, you know, once I set you free, you'll be better to the next one, you know?
I like that.
Oh, yeah.
There's been some people where it didn't work out with you, but they had a whole new mindset moving forward.
Yeah. Right. You will be a less selfish lover with your next one because I didn't let you get away with that. And that's all I can do is just kind of pay it forward and release these better sexual beings out into the world.
Well, God bless you. When you say it like that, God bless you. Now, I also am laughing to myself here because I taught improv forever and was really well regarded as a teacher and taught probably a couple thousand people over the years. And there's one thing that I know is I was always a fan of teaching people like you in the improv world. And now you're at a point where you're helping to run a school. So I know it worked out, but it always makes me laugh because every once in a while you get someone from just a very unique walk of life like this. and they're really good, but you're always encouraging your students, like, just root everything in honesty and just like make your real life kind of the starting point before you start getting too wacky. And then every once in a while you get somebody in a class where that doesn't work or that's creating some like situation that feels wonky. And then you go, well, wait, tell me about your real life. And they go, well, for the past 2 decades, I've been helping to distribute and teach the world about which lubrications work best for beginner butt play. And then you go, oh, well, that, okay, yes, you're, when I say keep it grounded in reality, your reality is already an improv scene to most people. Most people would be fighting to get a scene that had this information. Yeah. And that's just your real life. And I'm sure you've run into that from time to time. But I bet your students also, I bet you really root for the weirdos who show up too. I bet that the improv students,
the weird, I mean,
I bet they flock to you in Vegas when they find you.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're still too new. Like, we literally just launched classes, but I think, yeah, what I love the weirdos, you know, that's what we are. We are the island of misfit toys, you know, we're the island of misfit sex toys. And I think what we're seeing a lot of, like, when my worlds get to collide is when I'm very lucky. And I recently did a musical improv show where I sang a song about sex education and how virginity is a social construct. And I was like, this is, I could end everything now and go out on a high note. Like, my worlds have collided in the most beautiful ways. And the snaps and cheers that we were getting from all the young, you know, like the people in the next generation, whatever they are, Gen Z, we're just loving it, you know, like we're breaking cycles. I think, you know, I'm 37 years old and I think I'm a part of that millennial generation that's helping break the cycles from our parents. It wasn't their fault. But we can do better from here on out. And I think, I don't know, I'm in a very unique position to help in very specific ways.
Love it. I love it. And you've said it twice now that virginity is a social construct. We have 5 minutes left. So it's impossible, I imagine, to get into this. But so my guess, let's see, virginity as a social construct. This is new to me. If I was to hazard a guess, would I say, right? Because fundamentally, there is an era in my life when I had not had sex, and fundamentally that changed at some point, and I was someone who had had sex. So in that way, it feels to me like virginity is a point in my timeline where I can say, I understand. But I could see an argument, and I wonder if it relates to the idea of giving this life step any sort of weight or mysticism or involvement in morality or religion is something that people use as a method of control, when in reality, we're just animals who are programmed to want to do that eventually. And we've attached all these meanings to it as a way of judgment or manipulation or control. Am I close?
Yeah. I think you basically hit the nail on the head. And I think religion in this specifically plays a tremendous part.
Smart motherfucker sometimes, man.
You really are. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, it is historically meant something different for, and when I say men and women, I mean, you know, like the gender binary that we've all grown up comfortable with and familiar with. A man losing his virginity is a different story than a woman losing her virginity. And, you know, he's going to get high fives and pats on the back, and she's going to get shamed and, you know, talked about, oh, she's a slut, she puts out. So, you know, sex doesn't have to mean penetration from a penis to a vagina. That's the other thing. You know, if you want to talk about realistically, and I know we only have a couple of minutes, you know, a lot of people have quote unquote lost their virginity, due to harmful, terrible acts, you know? And so that's the other reality. It's like, you know, you get to dictate what having sex means to you. And the first time that happens is entirely up to you. You know, you don't have to count when you were assaulted. You don't have to count when something happened that you didn't consent to. So that's up to us as individuals. Like, I think that's so much more empowering to take ownership of that as opposed to, you know, oh, this person took my virginity at a certain age, you know, like, no, I'm a virgin again for as long as I want to be, you know, like that's up to us.
I was just shocked. I'm sure you saw it too. There was a news just a few weeks ago about, I forget which country it was, but their military just stopped doing a thing where when female doing a virginity check on female members of their military, where they basically have someone
check for a hymen,
someone check their hymen through digital penetration, where you sit here, you go, that's the exact sort of thing that makes me understand how, you know, not everything you're saying, but where I see the angle where I go, oh, what do the idea of virginity somehow being important means that when you join the military in this country, a doctor or someone who outranks you gets to touch your private parts to see where you're at and make assumptions about it.
How do you prove
ooh,
that?
Ooh.
Yeah.
You just go,
and
ooh.
You can only prove that with a hymen. You can't prove that with someone who has a penis, you know, like it's just entirely one-sided.
Right. And it's, like I said, manipulation and control and an example where it's so clear cut by modern standards to go, why would that even matter? And then when you say it about that, there's so many other ways in which we've decided virginity matters. And you go, well, why does that matter? And the answer so often is, oh, it doesn't. Oh, it doesn't. We put all this weight on it for all sorts of reasons. So I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
I'm glad we got to talk about all of this.
Oh, I'm glad. I was just going to say the same thing. I'm glad we got to talk about all of it, about Vegas, about sex toys, and about open-mindedness. And if I guided it too much towards the sex stuff, I do apologize, but I feel like you had so much stuff to say about it that's going to get people thinking. I think people are going to maybe let their guard down and talk to their partners a little bit more about some of their desires that aren't acted upon, vocalize some of their wants and needs, and
that would be my dream come true if that's what comes from this. Yeah. No, I'm happy you guided it in that way. It felt like that's where we needed to go. And that would be the best outcome, would be for people to talk to their partners and themselves about more of this stuff.
I mean, look, if the best outcome would be if the Beautiful Anonymous fan base en masse just all of a sudden embraces butt stuff more than they ever have. I bet we have a higher butt stuff appreciative audience per capita than most podcasts already, though. I bet a lot of our people out there are okay with butt stuff.
You have to.
Don't you think?
Definitely. Definitely. Especially, considering that you started the eating ass movement. Yes.
I'm not going to claim that I started the eating ass movement. I will say.
I know.
No, I know. I'm yes-anding you here. I'm yes-anding you here, as you would teach me to do in your class. I'm not going to say that I started the movement. I am going to say that I happily threw some fuel on the fire. And let me say this, too. Because we're over time now, but if I'm going to be totally honest, it was a thing I hadn't done. There was a stretch when I was single, and I was dating someone who was lovely and hilarious, and I think we both knew this was going to be like a fun, somewhat casual thing, and she just told me, she said one day, do this. I said, I don't have a problem with it. But it took someone who liked it to just sort of tell me, you're going to do this because I like it. And me going, I've never done that before. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Let's try it. And that's what's at the core of that joke. Outside of the like, everybody needs to eat more butt giggling. It's like, yeah, someone who really liked that told me they liked it once and I did it because I wanted them to like the experience with me. And they had a lot of fun and that was really fun. And that's not something to sit around and overthink. Eat a butt.
No, but I like the fact that you said this. You said she was lovely and hilarious. And I think that's the moral of the story is it will take a lovely, hilarious person to convince you, to open your mind to butt stuff.
Well,
and that's what I hope I've done today.
Oh, absolutely. I would say you are lovely and hilarious. And you know what? I was very lucky. And I can say I've been very lucky that in my life, there's been a number of people who have been open with me. And when I say lovely and hilarious, I think hilarious might also be shorthand for completely unapologetic about what she was looking for and had no qualms telling me, even if she knew I was going to be awkward about it, and we would laugh and talk about it and try, and it was freeing and it was not Catholic at all and it was joyous, and she is someone I think fondly of, and I thank her for teaching me how to be a better, more open-minded human and lover. Because like you said, everybody else benefits from that as you travel through the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I thank her too. And I thank you, Chris. What an excellent way to spend my lunch break today. Oh,
I thank you. Now, please, let's get out there. Let's sell some butt plugs. Let's sell some high-end lube. Let's sell a couple pocket pussies. Let's sell...
If this makes it to the Facebook group, if this episode airs and it makes it to the Facebook group, I'll share some links in there.
I would love that. What's the big product that you're pushing these? Any product right now that you're like, we're making this thing, I'm loving it. You want to get a plug-in? Not a butt plug. That sounded bad.
It's our vibrating snug plugs that I'm a big fan of. Vibrating snug plugs. That's what they're called. You can Google that.
A vibrating
and,
snug plug.
And yeah, maybe I'll...
Okay, let me just real quick, before I let you hang up, I'm just going to Google. Vibrating snug plug. And then, okay. Oh, I think I know the name of your company now.
Got it.
Oh, cool. It's weighted.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, you found it.
Oh.
Yeah.
The
snug plugs are originals. Like the snug plugs without the vibrations are top notch. But I think the vibration adds a whole new level.
I'm looking at the vibrating one. It has great reviews. I'm going to tell you, based on my experiences, I don't know that it would be for me, but I can tell anybody who's not image searching this, I'll leave you with this. The people image searching this, you're all going to agree with me. Man, does that thing look easy to remove. Man, is that a well-designed, easy to remove. Nobody's going to have any qualms about that thing getting stuck anywhere because you have really designed this with ease of removal in mind. And anybody, it's going to alleviate that concern for anybody,
That's what I'm here for you and I'm here for your butts.
Oh, there's an XL. We got an XL. It comes in a lovely
People
variety.
People buy big
comes.
Online.
What's that?
Yeah. People buy very big products online.
Is this thing dishwasher safe?
The non-vibrating one is, yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this call.
Oh my God, my pleasure. Thank you.
Caller, thank you so much. Sincerely, that was joyous. I hope we get to talk again sometime. Thank you so much. This show is produced by Anita Flores. It's engineered by Jared O'Connell and Marcus Hahn. The theme song is by Shell Shag. Please go support Shell Shag in all of their endeavors. If you want to know more about me, including my tour dates, chrisgeth.com. Wherever you're listening, there's a button that says subscribe, favorite, follow. It really helps us out when you hit that button, so please do so. And you can find our latest merch at podswag.com. We've got mugs, shirts, posters, and more. Find ad-free episodes of Beautiful Anonymous, as well as tons of other shows over at Stitcher Premium. Use the promo code STORIES for a 1-month free trial at stitcher.com/premium.